Struggling to sleep? Well, doctors have found a new solution. Rewatch Manchester City versus Arsenal. It wasn't a classic at the Etihad, but there's plenty to look back on, including progress for the Gunners and praise for Gabriel. Plus, we'll have the latest on Bukayo Saka's fitness and look forward to Wednesday's clash with Luton. That's all coming up on this episode of The Arsenal Beat. Yes, hello and welcome back to this episode of The Arsenal Beat. I am Kaya Kainak, the wise among you would have noticed that I am not Mark Man Bryant. He is away this week in Japan on a far-flung trip there. Very exciting times for him. So you are stuck with me this Easter weekend and I am joined by Jordan Davis from The Sun. Jordan, how are you?
I'm very well, yes. My nerves couldn't really take most of yesterday. It was one of the most tense games I've ever watched, and that was just Liverpool Brighton, and then having to watch Man City Arsenal after that was a tough one, but I think in the end quite a good result.
Talk me through your viewing practice yesterday, because I had the misfortune of getting various multiple trains and all the way up to Manchester, although I had the company of Simon Collins, which made it a bit better, but it was a difficult journey. But I think maybe a slightly more easy watching experience for you.
Well, you could say that. Yeah, no. Unfortunately, I wasn't at the game yesterday, but I was watching, not in a working capacity, and chose a little pub in King's Cross. So the travel there wasn't too bad. But for some reason, a lot of Liverpool fans in that pub, and they decided to stick around then for the City Arsenal game, which was quite a horrendous experience because I don't think they even knew who to cheer for. And yeah, it was tense. It was horrible. Many beverages were drunk just to get through it. And I'm glad to say that I did get through it eventually.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. Well done. It's interesting watching in a pub full of Liverpool fans. I imagine they would have found a way to make the game that they weren't involved in about them, maybe. Is that an unfair expectation to see what happened?
Oh no, it was completely all about them. They were singing throughout, they were cheering for both teams, which is very unnerving when you're so nervous and you're just hearing cheers from behind you go for either side. So yeah, it very much was a Liverpool day out, and probably the best result they could have wished for, because they now sit top of the league.
Yes, well, we'll get on to what it means for the title race later, but let's discuss the game that happened yesterday at the Etihad. So there's been a lot of discussion, basically. It seems, I thought at full time, that the prevailing emotion among everyone was that was a terrible game of football. Thank God that's over. I hope we don't have to see two more of these in the Champions League semi-finals. Went down to the press conference room, ready for Mikel Arteta to put some sort of spin on it. But what I didn't expect his first line to be was, it was a really thrilling match. It seems to be quite an even split on social media between sort of tacticos who really love that kind of football and call it a chess match and all that kind of stuff. Do you think it was boring, or are you more in the camp of the it was fascinating kind of thing?
I think it was fascinating to begin with. I think just the way they'd set up and the way City dealt with their injuries, just how whether Arsenal would go full pelt or whether they would sit back, and it was mainly the latter. And Mikel did warn before the game that they would have to suffer a little bit, and they suffered for large periods, probably longer than they wanted to. But no, I think as the game went on, even I was starting to kind of just want something to happen, some controversy, Mikel to kind of square up to someone on the touchline like he normally does in these big games. But no, I get what you mean. And it was a chess match played with just pawns. It wasn't any excitement about it. But I think what is exciting is that we saw Arsenal are able to compete at that level and not lose their heads like they did last season. And they're able to stay in games, they're able to defend in such a way that Roy Keane calls Erling Haaland a League Two player. That's how well Arsenal defended. Apparently, it made Erling Haaland like a third, fourth tier player. But yeah, I think it was exciting in a dull way, if that makes any sense. I think it's exciting in terms of a prospect of what this team can now go on to do. But in terms of the spectacle itself, I think Arsenal very much played their part in making it a boring game, which I think Arteta would have wanted that anyway. If you gave him the choice between between an exciting game and a dull game, he would have chosen a dull game every single time. And that's where Arteta's matured. That's where the team's matured. They don't have to bow down to pressure from the outside, pressure from fans, pressure from pundits who want it to be a good game. Arsenal wanted to be a game where they get points, and they got one yesterday, which is far better than no points and playing a lovely game.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. I think so. The way I phrased it in my piece this morning, and to give a little shameless plug to that, if you want to go read it on Football London, but the way I phrased it was Arsenal earned the right for that to be a really boring game in a way that I don't think they've been able to in the past. I mean, you spoke last season about how they went up there to the Etihad probably needing this kind of game, probably needing the game to be really dull and keep it 0-0 and just put a pin in any City momentum that was building. And they couldn't do it because they tried to play City, not sort of the team on the pitch or not the game that was in front of them, but they tried to play the way they wanted to play. And if you ask Mikel Arteta how he wants to play football, chances are he doesn't want to spend most of the game sitting in his defensive third, defending, hitting teams on the counter-attack. He probably doesn't want to do that. He wants to play more expansive style, as we've seen with Arsenal in most of 2024. You know, they're the top scorers in the Premier League for a reason. But I think what they did so smartly this time, and as you sort of mentioned it there, was they played how they needed to play to get the result that they needed to get, which is such a difference from what they were able to do last season. And in my opinion, a sign of how far they've come. But is that maybe overdoing it in terms of the praise? Because City obviously had players out. They had Walker out. They had Stones out. Edison was missing. Haaland, as you mentioned, was not on the best of form. Do you think Arsenal maybe missed a trick by not going for it more? Or do you think they've earned the right not to need to go for it more, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, before the game, when the list of injuries came out, in my head, I felt like this was Arsenal's chance and they're not going to get a better chance than this. And it's all very well talking like that before the game. But as soon as a game like that kicks off and you see just how well City's back four can play, even without Walker and Stones, it's incredible. And you suddenly then have to kind of almost do a complete 360 and say, well, no, hang on. This is still a Man City team capable of destroying most teams in Europe, even with some of their best players out, and they still had the spine of Rodri, De Bruyne and Haaland. I know they're missing Edison as well, but it's a tough one because I think Arteta would have been encouraged by the players that City had out, but at the same time, a point away at the Etihad and only allowing City to have one shot on target, I think you can only take positives. And yes, you could say it's a chance missed, and if they don't go on to win the title, then you could turn around and say, well, had they pushed a bit harder at the Etihad and got that 1-0 win, then it could have made all the difference. But the irony is that these sorts of games, they kind of teeter between being a missed opportunity or complete genius. When Trossard was put through, had he played the ball across to Martinelli and Martinelli sticks it in, Arteta is hailed as one of the great performances of the last 5-10 years against one of the best teams in the world. And had Jesus maybe had his shooting boots on, and there was a moment in the first half when he cuts in and he maybe should hit it first time, but he takes another touch. But there were moments for Arsenal. And City didn't. They had the one from the corner, and Haaland had a few kind of half chances. But no, Arsenal had chances, and that's what Arteta talks about. Is about being in games and then seizing the moment when you these sorts of games you get that one chance. Earlier in the season, it was Martinelli at the other end at the Emirates, and he scores and makes it 1-0, and suddenly that's an amazing performance. Had Martinelli not scored, it was an incredibly dull game. And very similar to the Etihad. So one goal, one chance in these games can make the difference. And I think Arteta's now encouraged that as the season goes on, his team will be able to take those chances against weaker opposition, because I don't think they're going to play a tougher team this season than Man City away.
Yeah, I agree. And I think to an extent, it's arguably hypocritical of us to be criticising Arsenal for not having gone for it and not sort of being able to manage the game, if you like, given that they played a very similarly cagey game in Porto a couple of months ago, almost the exact same sort of tenseness, very little happening, very dull game. Obviously, there was a lot more stop-start and Arsenal were favourites to win that game. But in the context, they didn't need to win it in the way they didn't need to win at the Etihad yesterday. And they concede with the last kick of the game, and we're all talking about how Arsenal lack game management and they don't know what they're doing. And now they're able to go and make progress in the sense that they can actually see the draw out and they don't do anything stupid in the 94th minute. They don't try and go and win the game in a way that I think maybe some people suggested they should have done. And now they've come away with a point that I think really helps them in the title race. And obviously a huge part of that was Gabriel and Saliba at the back. I want to talk specifically about Gabriel, because Saliba gets a lot of flowers, and rightly so, because I think he's one of the best defenders in the Premier League. But I think it was telling that last season, Erling Haaland ended the game sort of flowing locks, running away, celebrating the goal, last kick of the match. This season, he ends the game sort of in a headlock from Gabriel, and the two are fighting right at the end. And they, you know, they make peace at the end, and it's a sign of the respect they have for each other. But Gabriel has been sort of with Arsenal from the start almost of this Mikel Arteta project, and he's gone up every gear as the team has improved. And it's funny, lots of people were saying in the summer that maybe Arsenal need to move on from him. But is he one of the most important players, the most important player in this Arsenal side? I think we really need to to give him some flowers after a really good performance yesterday.
Yeah, I think it'd be mad if Arteta decided that it was time for him to move on. He's proven time and time again that he's one of the best centre-backs in the Premier League. I think it's interesting, though, what you said about he was... He's been at Arsenal and been under Arteta's project right from the start. And I think that's what's almost held him back a bit, because he's had to come in and play with lots of different centre-back partnerships who weren't really up to his level. And they almost made him look worse. And then he would then end up making mistakes because he's been asked to do too much, or he's having to run out and pass out, and there's a player there that isn't quite ready. So almost he was almost too good for that team when he was coming through in the early years of Arteta. And he's just been waiting for this centre-back partner. Whereas Saliba came in start of last season and suddenly had Gabriel. And suddenly had people like Zinchenko and Ben White. And it's so much easier to fit into a system when all the players are in tune and they're all at the same level. Gabriel was thrown into a project that wasn't at the same level. And as a result, he was made to look maybe a bit average at times. And he did make mistakes and he did give the ball away. And I think that's why fans at the start were a bit like, well, let's just replace him with Saliba and then we'll find someone else. Arteta's done the right thing, and he's seen that Gabriel will flourish in a team and with a partner that is at the same level as he is. So, yeah, no, he's been amazing. And I think his physicality with Haaland was incredible. I know Saliba did that job at the Emirates, but kind of Gabriel, he's got this real leadership role now, and he takes things into his own hands, and he knows when to step in. He now knows when to be aggressive and when not. And yeah, there were a few times when he kind of stepped into Haaland and maybe should have been a bit cuter, but I think he was sending Haaland a message that you're not going to get anything from me today. And that's really important. And the fact that Haaland was even talking to him and smiling and joking with him at the end of the game just shows the respect that I think the Premier League is now starting to have for him, and they now look at him and Saliba as a real formidable duo. I mean, Haaland having no shots home and away against Arsenal is an incredible statistic. I think no other Premier League team has managed to do that. So that's just testament purely down to Gabriel and Saliba.
And the Community Shield as well. Don't forget the final, as Mikel Arteta calls it. Indeed. Many shots there as well. So a sign of just how good Gabriel has been against Erling Haaland and Saliba too. But let's talk big picture for a second and think about what this means for the title race. I'm kind of in a weird position with it, where I was expecting Sunday to be a day where we sort of had a much clearer idea by the end of it of where the Premier League title might end up. But I kind of think we're exactly where we started in many senses, that Arsenal aren't out of it, City aren't out of it, Liverpool are probably leading the way, and then Pep Guardiola says that they are the favourites for the title now. Do you agree with that? Do you think that's mind games from Pep? Do you still think City are favourites? Do you think Arsenal have gone from maybe third favourites to second favourites over City now? Or what do you think's changed after yesterday, if anything?
I think absolutely nothing has changed. And I know that sounds strange because after we're top and now they're second. And it's one of the most bizarre title races ever, because Arsenal have been top and they weren't favourites. Liverpool are now top. I still don't think they're favourites. I still put Man City down as favourites just because of their run-in and kind of just how they manage these sorts of run-ins. But it's a really strange title race, because I think in any other season, for Arsenal to go unbeaten against Man City, to beat them at home and then draw away, you'd then think at this stage of the season they'll be there and thereabouts and they should be gunning for the title. But they've still got... it's now out of their hands. I still think there's a frailty to Liverpool where they may give away a few points towards the end of the season. And their last three games are Spurs at home, Villa away, Wolves at home. Three incredibly tough games. So all Arsenal and City have to do is make sure they're within 2 points, 1 point. And this next week for Arsenal against Luton and then Brighton, massive week to kind of stay in the hunt. And it really is going to go down to the last day of the season, and we could have a possibility of three teams being able to win the league on the last day, which would be incredible. And I just want to throw in actually a fun fact about that. So if Arsenal, Liverpool and Man City are all going to win, where they can all win the league on the last day of the season. So normally there's a helicopter and they fly kind of one trophy here and at the Etihad and then one at Anfield. But they need three trophies because it's going to be in three different places. There aren't actually three replica Premier League trophies. There are two. There's one that stays with the Premier League club that has won it, and then there's one that stays with the Premier League HQ, wherever that is. So they're going to have a third one, which is going to be a fake. It looks real, but it's a lot lighter. It's not made of the same material. It's not made of the same metal. So we could have a possibility of a team lifting a completely fake Premier League trophy on the final day. And it would just be quite strange, I imagine, because the Premier League trophy is quite heavy. And yet this one is going to be, like, in my head, I'm picturing those tinfoil FA Cup ones that the fans have kind of in the stands, but it's going to look a bit better than that, I hope. But yeah, that's just a little fun fact I'd throw in there, that there will be a team, if all three can win it, there will be a team lifting a fake trophy by the end, if all three.
And if you were in charge of if you were in charge of deciding where that trophy, the real trophy, is going to be, because let's be real, they'll put the real trophy closest to where they think is most likely to win it. Where would you be putting that right now?
I'd probably have the real one at the Etihad. I'd put the second one maybe at Anfield, because it has to be Arsenal. It has to be Arsenal that has the fake one. Just that would just sum up the whole kind of journey and Arteta and where they've come from. And for them to then lift a fake Premier League trophy at the end of it, it would just be surreal and actually quite funny. I'm not sure if Arteta knows this little fun fact, but I think even he would see the funny side if they won the league and he got to lift a fake. Because to be fair, he's already lifted a real one. He's done it with City. He knows what it feels like. So he can lift a fake one if he wants.
I think that's one to give him in a press conference when you get the chance. But obviously his chances of lifting a trophy, real or fake, is going to be determined, like you say, by this week, which is going to be massive. And as Arsenal build up to Luton, there's a slight injury concern with Bukayo Saka, who limped off. And Mikel Arteta was asked by yours truly, actually, about his fitness in the post-match press conference. And let's hear what he had to say.
Well, as you know, he's been out for a few weeks now with a little problem, and he was feeling that fatigue right now. He hasn't trained. He trained one day before the match, so he had a big contribution, but it was a lot, 90 minutes for him today.
And it's a bit of a concern, isn't it, Jordan, that Saka is struggling. Obviously, seeing him limp off is not particularly new, but I think this one is a muscle injury as opposed to the impact injuries where you get kicked and you get a bruise, you can shake it off. Whereas a muscle injury requires rest. And I think I was speaking with Simon about this on the train, actually, back from Manchester. And we were basically saying that this is Arsenal's last chance really to rotate for a very long time, because they'll need a full stride up against Brighton. They'll need a full side against Bayern. They've got difficult games coming up after that as well. And the difficult thing is, Arteta has never really shown a willingness to rotate, and he would argue something very different, I'm sure. But I think for the first time now, and you mentioned how the bench being so strong for Arsenal at City, and they had options to change it. If you're Mikel Arteta going into this Luton game, having seen Luton give Spurs a good run for their money, and having, you know, Luton be the only team in the league that scored more than twice against Arsenal, you know, you can't write them off necessarily, even though Arsenal are strong favourites. How many changes are you making for this game? Are you resting Saka? Are you maybe swapping out the fullbacks? What are you looking to do?
I'm definitely resting Saka. I think he has plenty of options in that position now. I'm giving Thomas Partey probably a start. He did look fairly comfortable when he came on at the Etihad, and if anyone needs minutes in this squad currently, he does. I mean, to get him fully fit and firing would be a massive boost at the end of the season. And also Jorginho, Arteta didn't expect for him to play as many games as he had done this season. And no one knew how important he was going to end up being. And he has been battling through a few knocks and bruises and slight injury concerns to kind of play. So I would be taking him out and putting Partey in, and also because Partey and Rice haven't really played together a lot, so it'd be good to see them get some chemistry going. Other than that, I actually think I would leave it as it is. Kivior looked fantastic again at the Etihad, and I feel like he's a sort of player that needs to keep playing to keep that momentum going and to kind of keep his confidence high, because I think you can rely on Tomiyasu coming in whenever, really, and doing a job no matter what. I think that's about it. I don't think I'd be trying to risk bringing someone like Eddie or Smith Rowe or even Vieira in. I'd probably also start Jesus again and give Martinelli another rest. I know he came on against City, but I'd probably keep him fully, fully fresh for Brighton. Jesus looked really sharp against City. I know he didn't have his shooting boots on, but I think, again, he needs game time. So, yeah, what's that? Three changes. I think that's probably enough without changing too much. And no disrespect to Luton, but I think Arsenal can afford to make changes for this one and win comfortably. I know they gave Tottenham a scare, but Tottenham play in a completely different way, and I think Arsenal will be determined to get some points back on the board.
So I'm going to challenge you on one of the changes that you've made there. And I think this is the game to give Thomas Partey a start. I totally agree with you there. But Arteta seems to play Declan Rice no matter what every single game. And I think there's obviously a reason for that, because he's been the best player in the Premier League this season, in my opinion. But do you think Rice and Partey is a bit overkill at home to Luton in a game where you're expected to win? Do you think you can get another offensive midfielder in there? Do you think maybe a Vieira or a Smith Rowe? I know you said you wouldn't play them, but do you think, Now that I've put this thought into your brain, is anything changing? Do you think it's maybe a slightly wiser thing to do, given you keep those guys on board when you might need them later in the season, that kind of thing? Because it's been an issue for Arteta in the past, hasn't it, where he's had chances to play some of the fringe players and give them a chance and hasn't done so. And then when he's needed them at crucial stages of the season, they've not been match fit, they've not been confident, they've not been ready to come in. And I just think that this is your chance. And if they play badly, then you can legitimately say, look, you had your chance and you didn't take it. But I think personally, Partey and Rice is a bit too much, even though I think Partey needs minutes. So it's a really interesting dilemma. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I see what you mean. And I get what you mean about the fringe players. But I think he had to use them in the past because of the amount of injuries Arsenal had and the likes of Jesus and Partey and even Tomiyasu weren't around. I think it would personally be too much of a risk to even put someone like an Eddie or a Smith Rowe or a Vieira in. I think the squad's that good now that you can bring in, say, if you look at the bench from Sunday, you have Partey, Trossard, Martinelli, Tomiyasu, and Zinchenko. And then after that, you don't really need to make changes. I think he'll only now, I could be completely wrong, but I feel like Smith Rowe, Vieira, and Nketiah, I think they'll only be used in extreme circumstances, or if there's injuries, or if they're 6-0 up and they want to bring some players on. And that may sound really harsh, but I think Arteta has shown in the past that he's not a sentimental guy. Doesn't really care if you haven't had a game a minutes in God knows how long. If you're not going to influence the team, then you're not going to play. And just on Partey, I do get what you mean. I mean, for Arteta, just purely height wise, I think he would love it to have just another massive person in that team for set pieces, defending and attacking, especially as Declan now takes corners. So you need someone else in there to fill that role. And I also think it could give a chance for Declan to push higher. I know he's been wanting and to kind of be that more of that kind of Steven Gerrard player that kind of drives into the box. And with Partey there, you can tell Declan, especially against someone like Luton, to just push forward and kind of float around and kind of have a bit more freedom. And it's more just to experiment, really, whether it works. And you know what? If it doesn't work and Partey and Rice just don't look like they can play together, then that's fine. But I think if there's ever a game you can try this sort of experiment, I think, you should. And just it'll give Deck a chance to get four more, which is what he wants.
Fair enough. It's an interesting dilemma, isn't it, coming up for Mikel Arteta? And obviously we're going to be at the press conference tomorrow. We're going to try and grill him about it and probably not get very far in terms of our attempts to do so. But I guess that leaves about time to wrap it up. We've gone for nearly half an hour. We've managed to squeeze half an hour out of, I think, probably the most boring game of the Premier League so far this season. So we've done very well, Jordan and I. So, Jordan, thank you so much for joining. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We managed to squeeze a lot. So I'm very glad.
Yes, Arteta will be glad, I'm sure, if he's listening to this, to the amount of juice he managed to squeeze out of the podcast. He'll also be even more delighted to hear that we've got another episode coming up this week after the Luton game and also before the Brighton game. So we'll be looking forward to the Brighton game and reviewing the Luton game. It's going to be a fascinating week in the title race. So do keep listening to the Arsenal Beat. Keep liking the tweets, all that kind of stuff. Keep sharing it. Keep subscribing and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you can, because it really helps. Until then, guys, thank you so much for joining and we'll be back in a couple days' time, or maybe 3 days' time. I can't quite do maths, but we'll be back this week at some point. Until then, cheers, guys, and stay safe.